On this episode, I'm talking with Tamara Taggart. She's an amazing broadcaster with a career spanning 28 years in television, radio, and digital media. She's a mother of three and a community advocate for so many causes that are close to her heart. And she's planning to continue to use her voice for change because she's been nominated as the Liberal Party of Canada's candidate for Vancouver Kingsway. Tamara's a woman I very much admire for many reasons, but predominantly because she's chasing her dreams, she doesn't apologize for it, and she doesn't let negative people or comments dull her shine. I was so excited to chat with her in Vancouver, and I won't make you wait any longer to hear what we talked about. Welcome to Playful Joy, a parenting podcast without the guilt. I'm here with Tamara Taggart. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited.
I am too.
Yay. We met at Catherine Roscoe Barr's Wellness Weekend in Victoria, which was gorgeous. And I wanted to ask you to please tell everyone about the food because I talked about it last time with Catherine and I don't think everyone believed me. I think they think I was just saying it.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, the food was amazing.
It was
good. Yeah. I don't eat meat and right. I just found like it was perfect for me because there wasn't really... I didn't even see meat, but maybe I just don't see it anymore. But
right. One night there was chicken.
It was there you go. But it was so good. Everything was good. I loved everything about that weekend.
And they had a little name tag if you had something that you know. If they were serving meat and you didn't eat it, then they I liked that. That was really good.
It was very good.
What was your one big takeaway from that? Mine was I get really I'm kind of an anxious person, type A perfectionist. And she said to use that energy and just tell yourself, I'm nervous because I care. I care about how this turns out. Mm-hmm. So that's why, change your brain's thoughts about that feeling inside your body.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because my husband always says to me, because I get disappointed so easily. Mm-hmm. And my husband always says to me, you have high expectations of yourself.
Right.
And because you have high expectations of yourself, you also have those same high expectations mm-hmm. of everybody else.
Yeah.
But the problem is not every, and it's not even a problem, not everybody has the same expectations that you have.
Mm-hmm.
So you're easily disappointed.
Yeah.
And he's right. He's so right. And so he's helped me a lot with that.
Mm-hmm.
But from that weekend, I mean, my biggest takeaway was around sleep and how valuable it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a good sleeper. I go to bed way too late. I'm not responsible with my sleep at all. And I don't give it the value that it deserves. Mm-hmm. Being a type A and being somebody who's always busy and all that sort of stuff, I always look at it as a waste of time. I don't have time to sleep.
Yeah.
You know, I've got things to do. I want to read this and do this and do that. And when you get a moment to yourself and that weekend, I really saw how important it was to value my sleep and I guess in a way honor it and not feel guilty about sleeping.
Right. I do that. I go to bed without doing three loads of laundry and then I lay in bed thinking I really should have just done five more things before I went to bed.
Exactly.
I recently got a weighted blanket and it's amazing. I'm laying with my son and I usually love cuddling with them when they go to sleep and stuff, and now I'm thinking about my weighted blanket. I'm thinking about going to sleep.
I know.
Which I've always liked to sleep, but
I bought one too. Really nice. And I bought it for Beckett.
Yes.
And I got it and Poppy immediately took it and she has been using it and she loves it, but now she's sleeping on top of it and I'm like, okay, you know what? I didn't spend all that money on that blanket for you to use it as a mattress pad.
Right.
Let's get, you know,
that's funny.
And Zoe really wants to try it, but of course Poppy won't let her.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, I need
Audrey
to steal
mine. And I said, no, it's made for, I bought it for my weight. You can't have it. That's what I told her.
Oh yeah, I should have done that because I did buy it. I bought a 15-pound one. Yeah.
No, I bought it for me. And then I'm like, no,
little
you
brother.
Can't. I'm sorry.
I should have done that.
She's a real rule follower. So I can be like, it says right here, you can't. You have to be weigh this much to use this blanket. But
funny.
I might get her one too. She would like it. She doesn't have problems sleeping, but
no,
it's just nice. It's like being
hugged. I know. It's a big hug.
Yeah, I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to share a quote with you and get your thoughts about it. It's
I don't know how to say his name. I'm sorry. It's Thich Nhat Hanh. And it's from his book, How to Love. And the quote is, "The most precious inheritance that parents can give their children is their own happiness."
Mm, so true.
Do you think that? I feel that our culture doesn't really tell the mothers that, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Don't you find that? I find the older I get, I surround myself with people who are like-minded, even on social media.
Yes.
You know, I'm surrounded, especially on Instagram, really. Actually, only on Instagram. I surround myself with people who are like-minded, mothers who follow, yeah, you know, what you just said, and knowing that, you know, our children follow what we do. They look to us, right? Mm. And I also look at, you know, how I was brought up, and I guess in some ways, I think a lot of us do this as parents. We maybe look at our past or look at our own upbringing and go, okay, these are the things I don't want to do.
Yes.
And I'm not sure that our parents' generation did that.
I don't think there was a lot of self-reflection going on.
As a matter
there.
Of fact, I'm pretty sure they didn't do that.
No, I don't think they thought. The word parenting,
yeah,
only comes up in, I believe it was like the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
So that wasn't even a thing. There was no, you didn't parent. You just had kids and then.
Right.
There was
well,
no
that's
word.
Obvious. You know?
Right.
It was, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that we're really seeing that now. And I mean, my mom all the time, she's like, I can't believe you're, you know, with the kids, you're doing this and you're doing it. So, because it's so different. My parenting is very different than her parenting.
Yes.
And so, I mean, I think that we have a generation now that does believe that, you know, that our happiness is really paramount to our kids' happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm not convinced at all, well, at least in my own experience, that was the case.
No, I believe that, like, my mom, your mom, that generation,
mm-hmm,
it was a real, you sacrifice everything for your children. And I listened to this other podcast called My Favorite Murder, and the woman is like in her 60s, and so her parents just basically ignored her. That's what she says. Like, they were having cocktails in the afternoon. It was like, go play. They didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So then the next generation, like us, is my mom wants to give all the attention to the kids, right? Like, she really wanted to do
okay,
that.
Okay, so
also,
I'm way older than you.
You're not
no, I
older.
Am.
No,
okay, so for me, it was more like in my grandparents, you know, I don't know what was going on there. I'm not sure. It was, you know, my grandma was a stay-at-home mom. She was raising three kids, all that sort of stuff.
But she wasn't taking them to piano lessons and stuff, right? It was like, go out and play.
Nothing.
Right.
No, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mom's generation, my mom took me to things.
Right.
But it didn't last very long,
right,
you know. Plus, I left home when I was 15.
Wow.
And my parents divorced when I was, you know, 10 or 11. And my mom remarried fairly quickly. And mm-hmm, they're, you know, yeah. I mean, so I left home when I was 15. And so it's a very different relationship.
Right.
And my mom is an amazing grandma. She is a great, great grandmother. Well, she's not a great grandmother, but do you know what I mean? She's
yes,
a, she's a great,
she's a wonderful grandma.
Grandmother. but you know, it, I don't know. Do we know more now, or do we know better now, or I don't know. I'm
I think
not
when
sure.
You know better, you do better. That's how I've had to think. And my mom had this conversation with me, because her mother was 16 when she had her, so, and then worked two jobs and had a husband who was an alcoholic and was off drinking away their rent money, and they had to move in the middle of the night. So that was her mom's experience.
Yeah.
And then she had to kind of forgive her mom. So she's the oldest, so then it all fell on her a little bit. And then she had to say she did the best she could with what she had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all kind of have to do that. I think our parents did the best with what they
100%.
Had. My mom put me in swimming lessons at, I don't know, 8 or 9. So when I went with my baby, She was like, what are you doing? You are wasting $60.
Yeah. Same.
And I mean, okay, that's, you have a point, but then Audrey like loves the water. I don't know.
I know. Same. I mean, it was the same. And all of our kids have been in swimming lessons since they were 6 months old.
It's and, fun.
But exactly. And there's a few things with that. One, swimming is a life skill. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And how privileged are we that we can put our kids in swim lessons at that young age? It's amazing.
Very, very lucky.
And it's a great bonding experience for you and your baby. They learn to trust you and love you and know that they're safe with you. I mean, there's all these subtle things happening.
Right.
So it's not really about learning to swim when you're 6 months old.
No, it's not at all.
It's a bonding experience.
You just splash them up and down and sing songs. There's not really any swimming going on.
It's fun, and it's about getting comfortable, you know.
Comfortable in the water. Yeah, yes, exactly. And not being afraid of it. Well, so that speaks to how we moved through the generations, because my mom was never taught to swim, still can't swim.
Mm.
And then she put me in swimming lessons at 8 and thought she was, that's fabulous. She's amazing, because she was never taught and she's teaching me. So that's great. And then I put my baby in at 6 months. So we're kind of like, we're moving on. And I think you're right. We just know more.
I think so.
I think so. Yeah. And it doesn't, I'm not like, why didn't you put me in swimming lessons at 6 months old? I can swim. I'm great. It's like, you know, we're all fine. The choices are, that's kind of what this whole podcast is about. Just taking all that shame and blame out of parenting and just, you want to put your kid in swimming lessons at 6 months? Great. You don't? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Fine.
Exactly.
It's okay.
Well, we do what we can do, right?
That's right. Yeah. I think you're right. I heard you speak, I don't remember where it was, it might have been on another podcast, about the story of your oncologist and how your medication, I don't know if it was making you nauseous or, but something.
Oh, yes. Very nauseous.
Okay. Yeah. And you contacted your oncologist and he or she?
He
said, let's just pull back, reset, and move forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is the best thing to do as a parent I've ever heard. I mean, it makes sense with medication. He wasn't being all wisdom. He was just saying, let's just reevaluate.
Yeah, he's a great doctor. Yeah. And I wasn't expecting him to say that to me when I called him. So I had started taking this oral chemo.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take, you know, one pill a day, and it was 400 milligrams. And it's very potent, and there's all these rules when you take it, like tons of water, take it with food, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I decided I would take it in the morning. And it made me, within like no time at all, it just made me so sick. And I've never been a person who's ever felt nauseous or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do with myself. I got thrush in my mouth, and I was so like sick from this drug within a very short period of time. Like I'm talking days.
Yeah.
And I wanted to quit. Like that's how bad it was. And I knew that this drug was saving my life, but I phoned him and I said, I have to stop. I can't do this anymore. Like. And he's like, Tamara, it's been a week. And I'm like, I know, but it's so awful. And he said, okay, well, that's okay. Let's think about this. Let's stop. And what he did was he made me stop. And then for 3 days, I took 100 milligrams.
Okay.
And I was fine. Then for 3 more days, I took 200 milligrams. And I was fine. So he was trying to find that spot where it turned from fine to not fine.
Mm-hmm.
So what we ended up doing was 200 milligrams in the morning and 200 milligrams at night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did for 3 years, and it was fine.
Yeah.
I've had other people that I know on the same drug, and they had the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, ask your oncologist, like, say, like, can I do, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, oh, they told me I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
And I found it interesting because it's, you know, I thought, well, is it that you can't or that they won't let you do that? Like, what is it exactly, you know, or just that, you know, these are the rules and we follow these rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I learned from my oncologist was that, you know, yes, there are rules, but there's also a quality of life, and there's also rules are meant to be, you know, not broken all the time. Sometimes some are, but meant to be malleable sometimes, especially when it comes to healthcare.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm still getting the dose I need
every
24 hours.
Right.
But my body needed that break, you know? And so anyways, it was a really good learning experience. And you're right, for not just for medication, but for life in general.
Just everything. I honestly think about it sometimes if I'm feeling down or low or depleted, I kind of go, okay, just stop.
Yeah.
Look at what you're doing. You worked 5 days last week when you said this year you were only working 3 days a week. Okay, there you go. You know, it's still not working. You can't do it, so stop. Or, reset and, okay, go back to 3 days because that's not working for you
exactly.
and your family. Or, I liked that because I think there's this badge of honor with mothers of doing it all, right? Like you need to go to the prenatal classes. You need to go to the mummy and me classes. You need to need to do all of this. And sometimes for you, that's not what
needs to happen. Well, I always say being busy is not a badge of honor.
No.
At all.
I don't.
No one, you don't get a special award for being the busiest.
No.
You really don't. No. And all it will do is you will suffer for it in the end.
And I think I find like my kids suffer. So when I'm depleted, then I can't respond to them in the way I need to, right? If I've had 5 days of working in a classroom and dealing with children and then I come home and I have nothing left, well, they're the ones that suffer, right? Because I'm short with them or...
Yeah. Oh, well,
I just have no
always.
Patience left.
The people you're short with are the people at home, the people you're closest to, right? Always.
Oh, no, my husband told me that. He's right.
It's so true. It's so, so true.
I feel it and I told you so coming on.
No,
he says
I know.
That. He says you're like, you're the worst. I get the brunt of it, I think, were his words.
Yeah, and my husband does too. Of course he does. I mean, and that doesn't make it right.
No, it's not.
But... No. It's important to note because, you know, I think to myself sometimes, like, at what point does my husband go, and we can't do this anymore?
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Because he puts up with, you know, and it's changed a lot since I stopped working in TV. I mean, I can reflect back now and go, oh my gosh, like, wow, I wasn't a psychotic person.
No.
I was just... short, dismissive sometimes and feeling like I was the one that was doing everything and no one else was doing anything.
Yeah.
And I remember my husband stopped me one time. He goes, do you honestly think that I don't do anything around here? And I said, and he goes, no, honestly, like, do you think that I do nothing around here?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I know you do lots. And he goes, okay, so why are you acting like you're the only person that does anything around here? And I said, oh my gosh, you're right. Why am I doing that? It's because he's the closest person to me.
Yeah.
And I trust him the most.
Right.
And I know he's going to love me through thick and thin and, you know, the ugly and the, you know.
Better
and that's not fair.
No,
that is not fair.
And I tell parents that when their children start kindergarten, it takes everything they have to make it through that full day of kindergarten. So when they come home, they're going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Because at home, they feel safe and comfortable to just, blah, blah, I can't handle life anymore. And I feel like when we're just extra stressed or overworked or too busy, we've taken on too many things, then that's how we act. And then it's our husbands that get the...
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel that's true. I have another quote from another book that you can add to your stack of color-coded bookshelf.
Yes.
Which I'm sure is beautiful. I'm very jealous. It's Joan Ryan, and the book is The Water Giver, The Story of a Mother, a Son, and Their Second Chance. It says, motherhood is about raising and celebrating the child you have, not the child you thought you would have. It's about understanding that he is exactly the person he is supposed to be, and that if you're lucky, he just might be the teacher who turns you into the person you are supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I just instantly thought of you and Dave after you had Beckett.
Mm-hmm.
Because there wasn't there wasn't sorrow, right? It was just...
Well, there was at first.
Yeah, okay.
For, you know, I'd say... Well, so Beckett was, you know, when Beckett was born, from the time he was born until we found out he has Down syndrome, I think it was 5 days.
Okay.
And that's because, I mean, you know, we didn't know. And yeah. I expected it when I saw him when he was born. Right. But they did a blood test. He was born on a long weekend. And mm-hmm. apparently these things take time to process.
Yes.
When you are waiting on pins and needles.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. you know, those 5 days were very, they were filled with a lot of fear for Dave and I. And then when we found out, we were, you know, in our bedroom on the phone with the pediatrician, and Dave and I just, you know, started bawling our eyes out.
Yeah.
And we had a house full of people downstairs, and we went downstairs. We, you know, stopped crying. We mm-hmm. said, okay, you know, everybody will follow us.
Okay.
So if we go downstairs right now and we act like we're sad,
yeah.
everybody else is going to be sad.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a beautiful baby boy downstairs that everybody yeah. is fawning over. So we're not going to go down there and be sad. So we went down there and we were like, hey, you know, we just talked to the pediatrician and it's confirmed Beckett has trisomy 21. And now we need to become experts. And
mm-hmm.
everybody, you know, didn't really know what to say or do. And
right.
I got, I went on to Amazon immediately and I ordered every book there was on Down syndrome.
Yeah.
And then I started to craft an email, and I wrote an email. It took me 7 hours to write.
Wow.
It's not that good. It just was really difficult to write.
Yes.
And we sent it to every single person we knew so that
wow.
everybody was on the same page. You know, we, our son was born, you know, pictures of him mm-hmm. and, he's beautiful and amazing. And, you know, he has, you know, explained Down syndrome
mm-hmm.
and that we weren't experts, but we're about to become experts. And we encourage you to come by and meet Beckett and you'll fall in love with him.
That's
and Beckett, that kid had more house guests than I think any baby on
yeah.
the planet. Like, I am not kidding. I at least,
amazing.
I bet he had over 200 people come by
wow.
Of our friends and family and stuff come by and hold him.
I really think that they feel that love. Like, everyone says babies don't know what's going on, but I really think they feel it.
Beckett did.
They know and they, you know.
Yeah, and Beckett, I know he did because I see it even today. He's 11 years old
guy.
And you know, he is very loved. And I mean,
mm-hmm.
after that, we just sort of, you know, marched on and went to doctor's appointments and all that sort of stuff and
mm-hmm.
did what we had to do. And I'm not saying it was easy,
no.
But it was just what we had to do. So we did it.
Yeah.
And it made us stronger. It made us more knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm.
And today I never think of Beckett and Down syndrome in the same, I just
yeah.
don't, like, Beckett
That's
is,
amazing.
Beckett
just
is just Beckett,
yeah.
yeah,
yeah,
and, you know, it's interesting, but the best part about it all
mm-hmm.
is the community that mm-hmm. It has brought me to,
yeah.
And that community just gets bigger and bigger all the time.
Right.
I meet new people all the time that are either pregnant with a baby who has Down syndrome, or they've just given birth,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we all us mamas, we, you know, we surround that person with love
mm-hmm.
and invite them into our, you know, exclusive club, and
mm-hmm.
and it's been
great.
Yeah. It's been amazing.
I feel like I struggled with that with my first daughter because she's like a year or so behind in reading and just didn't. I expected the same
mm-hmm.
thing. I had this expectation of, well, I'm a teacher. I can just teach you how to read. I can teach you everything you need to know. And she just didn't pick it up the way that I had expected her to. And so then I struggle with, like, how do I just fully accept her for, you know, where she is, how she is. Her birthday's in October. She started school late. She had all this separation anxiety. So there's no learning when you're
yeah.
in that stress place, right?
Yeah.
So she missed a lot of school, basically. So she's probably right where she should be, you know, where she
yeah.
needs to be. She is who she is. But then I want to help too, right? And I
yeah.
just, I'm like, I struggle with that, finding a balance of how do I accept her for who she is, but also get her the help that she needs? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sure Beckett needs extra, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think our job as parents is to remember that our kids are going, our job as a parent is to help our child discover who they are. And, you know, that's all I'm doing with my kids.
Yeah.
I have to be flexible as their mother to allow them to be who they want, not who I want them to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I want them to be who they want to be. And I don't know what that is yet.
Yeah.
And the sooner they can discover that, the better and easier their life will be.
Yeah.
Because I think that the struggles that some of us have as we get older is that we were never allowed to discover who it is we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And there's all these rules put on children, like, oh, you're going to take violin lessons because violin lessons are great and you'll be smarter if you take it and it'll help you with math and it'll do this and it'll do that. If your kid is going to be a violinist...
Yeah.
They will become a violinist,
right,
whether you get them lessons or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it will, they will find their way there.
Yeah. My brother at 5 cut out the Mission Minor hockey thing out of the paper because he wanted to play hockey and he'd been bothering my parents for 6 months and they thought they couldn't afford it. And they just were like, we just kind of ignore it and it'll go away. And then my dad said when he brought him the piece of paper, he cut out of the newspaper, which what 5-year-old even knows about a newspaper. My dad said, well, that was it. We had to sign him up then.
Yeah.
Like, we couldn't ignore him anymore. And I just keep saying to my husband, like, when Audrey finds her thing, then she'll be harassing us. We don't need to put her in all these sports. I mean, exposing them to things is great. But if she doesn't want to play softball again next year, oh, well.
Yeah. And so, you know, my kids, it's like, I have to remember when Poppy came to me and she said, I don't want to do ballet anymore. And I said, okay, why? And she goes, it's not my thing. I don't like it at all.
Wow.
And she was...
See? They know.
She was 5. And I thought, okay, well, I thought, well, maybe isn't she too young to decide that? And I thought, no, she doesn't like it. Why am I making her go?
Yeah.
Zoe loves it and still does it.
See? Yeah, it's
and,
interesting.
You know, with my husband, he loved hockey and he would play hockey as a little boy. But he was also very gifted at piano.
Hmm.
And his mother saw that. His mom saw how gifted he was. And so, you know, there was... She drove him to whatever music lessons he had to go to, and she followed his lead on it. And he's a musician. And he, you know, and that's how he's made his living. So I think that, you know, it's not about us.
Right. Yeah.
It's not about us. Mm-hmm. It's not about, you know, who we want our kids to be. Oh, you need to be a doctor or a lawyer or this or that.
Right.
It's about you can do, I tell my kids all the time, you can do anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, my parents told me that too. And that's amazing, right? And then we just have to let them do it. We just have to let them be who they're going to be.
That's, mm-hmm.
I think we're doing a better job of that. And I told you this story before, but I'm going to tell it again. I was like 13 and my dad is like a guy's guy and he hunts and fishes and does all those things. And I sat around the family dinner table and said, I think I'm going to be a vegetarian. And everyone stopped eating and stopped talking. And then my dad just looked up and we were all just waiting to hear what he had to say. And he just said, no, you're not. And then kept eating. And then everyone just kept eating. And that was it. It was like, I'm not allowed to be a vegetarian. Like, no. And then, but your daughter's vegan and you're supportive of it and my children have like dairy issues and I feel like we're, I don't know, are we getting better at just listening to our children?
I mean, I don't know. It's like, you know.
He didn't even give me an option. There was no option there.
We have one rule in our house. You can eat whatever you want as long as it's healthy. I mean, that is the only rule when it comes to food.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have treats. Of course we do.
Right.
But you know, when I buy popsicles, I buy real fruit ones or I make them, which is not very often, but you know, or, you know, if at Halloween, of course there's, we bend rules for birthday parties and all that sort of stuff.
Of course
we do.
Yeah.
I don't want to deprive them of the fun things in life,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, Zoe wanted to be vegetarian. So did Poppy. I said, no problem, you know, so we, you know, had a discussion about it. And I don't eat meat. I haven't since I, you know, after I had surgery for cancer, I stopped eating meat. I eat fish still. My kids don't, or Poppy still, listen, Poppy is very confusing. One minute she's vegetarian, the next minute she's eating ham. Yeah. So I don't know. Okay. I don't say anything.
Yeah.
Zoe used to, you know, be like the food police with her and be like, Poppy's eating. Poppy is at the breakfast buffet eating sausage right now. And I'm like, well, that's Poppy and she can do that. Like,
that's siblings
it's,
for you.
You know?
Yeah.
It's okay. She's like, does she know it's a pig? And I'm like, yes, she does know it's a pig. So don't worry about what she's eating. Yeah, you worry about what you're eating. Mm-hmm. And so Zoe, you know, she's been a vegan now for, I don't know, maybe 6 months. And she's doing great. And she eats super healthy. And she's very aware of what she's eating. And she's doing it for ethical reasons. She doesn't want to, she doesn't want animals to be harmed.
Yeah.
I was worried because... Well, no, I wasn't worried. I was tired of my mom bugging me about the fact that Zoe is not getting enough protein mm-hmm. and not getting enough this and not getting enough that, not getting enough this. Mm-hmm. So Zoe, I talked her into getting a blood test. So we went to our family doctor, got the requisition. Zoe was terrified, yeah. of course. Mm-hmm. It's very scary. Mm-hmm. And so I said, let's just do this and then you'll have information. And so she had her blood test and, you know, her hemoglobin, all that. And she is perfectly fine. Her iron is fine. Everything mm-hmm. is perfectly fine. So it made both of us feel better that we yeah. know that, you know, she's doing it right.
Well, we just want to do what's best for them. But respecting their wishes too. I mean, I feel like that's great.
I'm not going to make you eat a dead animal if you don't want to eat a dead animal. The end of story.
I feel like it's very freeing when you realize that you cannot make a child eat anything. And that's like, we come from my parents, you finish your plate, right?
Same.
Sit there till you finish your plate. My dad forced me to eat stewed tomatoes once and I still can't eat them. It was like traumatic for me.
Yeah.
They're disgusting. It was a texture thing and I can't
My mom used to make goulash and I don't know if you know what goulash is.
I do. I don't enjoy it.
I cannot eat ground beef to save my life. Yeah. Like I can't because of goulash. Goulash, like, but I don't eat meat anymore anyways, but right. you know, yeah, my mom thinks it's ridiculous that I don't eat meat right. and there's nothing to make you. There's nothing. And I'm always like, well, actually, there's a lot. Yeah. And, you know, so I buy plant-based cookbooks. And there's a lot of options out there.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of restaurants we can order from. And...
Mm-hmm, it's much better than it was before. Like, when I was 13, I bet my parents were just like, well, what do we feed you then? No, you can't.
Yeah.
You basically can't do that because this family eats meat and we don't know what to feed you if you decide to become a vegetarian. So it's more of like a... We both work full time. You can't be a vegetarian. Sorry. We can't deal with that.
Absolutely. But no. I'm sure there's people that think that I'm way too, easygoing with my kids or whatever. Like, okay, you can be a vegan. It's not that. It's about me allowing her to discover who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I'm telling you, this is who she is.
Yeah.
I don't see this girl eating meat ever.
Yeah.
I just don't.
They know. And I keep, my husband and I kind of fight about it because he wants them to eat healthier and I think they're fine. But I said to him finally, I was like, what are you going to do? Are you going to hold her down while I put the food in her mouth and then you're going to move her jaw? Like, you cannot make a child eat anything. You can bribe them. We try the three more bites and, you know, we all do what we're, do our best to get them to eat. But there's also the fact that their intuition hasn't been, taken away. Like, I feel like we were forced to eat everything on our plate, so we don't know when we're full. Like, it kind of kills those inner...
I still eat everything on my plate.
I know.
Me too. It's the bane of my existence.
This is
my problem.
Eating. Yeah, I'm still eating it. I'm like, why am I still... I'm full.
Oh,
I'm
so
full. And then someone's like, going to order cheesecake? I'm like, yeah, I could
probably
do a cheesecake.
Oh, yeah, because we would have a dessert, too.
I know.
We'd have pie. We always had, like, apple pie or cherry pie or, you know. Here's the thing, and maybe I learned this earlier, and maybe I learned it because of Beckett. You know, Beckett would be, he did everything later than a typical child. Mm-hmm. So he crawled later, he walked later, he, all those things. And I remember at first being really concerned about it. And somebody, you know, a therapist took me aside and said, listen, here's what you need to remember. He's going to walk one day. Mm. He's going to talk one day. He's going to eat solid food one day. He's going to do all those things. Yeah. It's just going to take time. So yeah. It's okay. There, don't worry about it. And I thought, true. And it's the same with a kid eating food. Okay, so they just want to eat Annie's pasta every day. Okay, well, you know what? They're not going to be 16 eating Annie's pasta. They're not.
I agree. Someone helped me so much with potty training. Audrey kind of wanted to potty train really early, and I was like, oh, but she's showing all the signs. Okay, we'll try it. And so then it was like this. She's great. Oh, she had 5 accidents. No accidents, 5 accidents. So I was so frustrated, and someone said to me, no one walks down the aisle in a diaper.
Yeah.
And I was, it was like, oh.
Well, I mean, some people do, but you know what I mean? Like, yeah. But you know, it's, it's true, right? It's
like, it was the same thing. It was like, she'll be potty trained one day.
Sweating about this. This is like, I mean, listen, if your pantry is filled with potato chips and, you know, fudge and, Smarties, then you got a problem.
Yeah.
But most of our fridges are not, our cupboards are not filled with that stuff. We have, you know, healthy food in there, healthy options, the odd treat. And, you know, if your kid wants to eat goldfish and Annie's pasta and cucumbers, oh my gosh, Poppy ate cucumbers like every day. She still does, but that's all she would eat is cucumbers for a few months. And everybody was freaking out. I'm like, it's fine. Look at her. She's healthy. It's going to be fine. Don't worry.
Good for you. My aunt has a story about that. Her 2-year-old ate fishy crackers for like a week. She said, she to this day says she didn't eat anything but fishy crackers for a week, which I think maybe she's embellishing a little, but maybe not. Toddlers are pretty. If they don't want to eat anything else and you try to push it, they're going to push back. They don't care.
It's the control they have too, right?
It's the only control they have. That and toileting.
Is what they're going to eat. Yeah. So...
I have a friend's son who, she put him in daycare and he didn't use the bathroom for the 8 hours he was at daycare.
Oh, yeah.
6 hours he was at daycare because that's what he could control.
Yeah.
And like, that's not, you don't want to get to that place where they're using things, you know, then you're going to have eating disorders when you're older. I feel like maybe, especially with girls, like I just think it's not a place you want to fight on because it can lead to other things. I wanted to ask you how you ask for help as a mother, or do you, and or is that something you're still working on? Because you shared that after you had cancer, or maybe when you had cancer, you had to accept help. You didn't have a choice.
True. True story. I mean, I think now I ask for help. Yeah, I do. You know, especially when it comes, I find right now at this stage we're in, you know, the kids are 8, 10, and 11, and there's a lot going on, and it's more involved now. It's more than just being at home and being exhausted because there's 3 kids, like, running around like maniacs, and, you know, the house is a mess, and, you know, I need to pack lunches and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now there's like, oh, okay, you know, today there's track and field, and then there's a ballet lesson, right? And then, there's tutoring, and then, okay, we're going to come home, and then there's lunches, and I need to feed the dogs, and I need to do this, and how am I supposed to do this? And, oh, yeah, I actually have my own adult life.
Yeah.
It's, so I do ask for help. You know, sometimes, you know, I ask, my mom helps out a lot, a lot. So, you know, and I feel bad because, you know, it's like, can you come over? Right. And
I ask for help last minute too. Sometimes I'm out and then I think, oh, I'm not going to make it to pick up my son, and my daycare's 2 doors down from my mom. It's like an in-home daycare.
Right. I would use that all the time then.
And so we were out in Abbotsford. I'm thinking, I probably make it, but maybe not. Can you just pick up Audrey? Like, my mom lives right close to her school too.
Yeah.
So, and I feel bad sometimes too, but I think my mom, anyways, will just say no if she doesn't.
Yeah, my mom will too. Yeah, and my mom has been, my mom, I mean, listen, if my mom wasn't, you know, I mean, she watched the kids while Dave and I went away for a week during spring break. And that's a lot.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
For, you know, my mom. It's a lot for anybody. It's a lot for me.
Yeah. is a lot for anyone.
You know, and I'm their mother.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate it. But I do ask for help. And, you know, we have a great network of parents around us, too, nice. Where, and I, you know, we all do it for each other. It's like, can you drive so-and-so home from the birthday party on Saturday? Or can you, do you mind bringing so-and-so home from, you know, track and field or whatever it is? And it's like, yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
So nice. you do have to lean on, we have to lean on each other,
find your tribe.
No, we have to.
Yeah, I think that's right. I wanted to end with something you never thought you'd say as a parent, and I'll give you mine first. When Audrey was 2.5, I started to realize that she had issues with food. So we had taken everything out of her diet and then introduced everything back in and that whole thing. And so we discovered that gluten gives her like a rash, so we took that out. So my mom and I drove probably an hour to this gluten-free bakery to buy her all of this stuff, because we tried all the recipes and gluten-free recipes just crumble. It's
hard
a nightmare.
To do, yeah.
It's a nightmare. So we went to this gluten-free bakery, and we're like getting all strapped in. So we went there, it was an hour, we're in there for half an hour. She's in the back seat. And then I turn around and she's eating the receipt. And I was like, Audrey, I don't think that's gluten-free. And then my mom just like burst out laughing. And I was kind of freaking because she was eating a receipt, which is like, this is so gross. But it was pretty funny. And I just thought, I never expected to say that to my 2.5-year-old. Like,
that's hilarious. But yeah. I could probably write a book.
Yeah,
you should. But on things that I never expected I would say. I'm trying to think of... I mean, there's so many, but they're mostly inappropriate.
It's got an explicit thing.
I'm trying to think about, you know, the thing that I find so funny is that I cannot call anybody by their name anymore. Like, I call Beckett George, I call George Beckett, I call my husband... I call my husband George. I call, you know, I call Zoe Poppy and Poppy Zoe. And I call,
because you're constantly saying names.
I can't.
Out, so it just.
And I remember my mom doing that when I was a kid and thinking, why is she like, why don't you know my name? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because she's like, and so they all make fun of me at home because, you know, like, George, my dog, one of my dogs, he's so bad. And so I'm constantly saying, George, don't do that. George, don't do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other day, for example, and this is not the first time and it won't be the last time, George was doing something and Dave was on the couch and I turned around and I'm like, oh my gosh, Dave, why did you do that? And Dave's like, what did I do? And I said, I mean, George. And he's like, oh my gosh, did you just call the dog my name? And I said, yes. And so I do that all the time. And the girls especially think it's hilarious. So every time I do it, they just laugh their heads off. I'm like, Poppy, Zoe, dead. George.
There's my grandma. There's a like family joke about that too. She would just say, Cindy, Kathy, Debbie, whoever you are.
I know. That's what I say all the time. I'm like, whoever you are, whatever your name is.
Yes. She always said that. My mom says the same. She never got their names right.
I know. And I think we all do it.
Yeah.
And if you haven't done it yet, you will.
You're getting there.
You will. You will eventually.
You have one child and you're saying, I would never do that. You will.
You will.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty funny. I just embrace it now.
Yeah. I wanted to say congratulations on your nomination for the Liberal Party of Canada's
thank you.
Vancouver Kingsway.
Thanks. I'm really excited. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. I'm really excited. You know, it is something that I always knew I wanted to do, something to use my voice for good and try to create a positive change for people that need a positive change, and there are a lot of us.
Yes.
And so I just really felt like this was my best opportunity, and we'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. And I feel really good about it, and I feel good about my decision to do this. And I'm finding that it is difficult to be a woman who throws her name into, you know, the ring, if you will, to step into politics, because it's nasty out there.
Yeah.
And it's really nasty out there. Mm-hmm. And it's not for the faint of heart, and that's not the way it should be. I think that anybody who wants to step up should have the opportunity to step up without the fear of being attacked on social media and all those sorts of things. And I think about the things that I'm trying to teach my kids, and you know, that my friends are trying to teach their kids, as we started talking about, right? You know, like respect and just like, you know, who are you, and being kind. Like these are things that we're trying to, you know, instill in our kids, so that the next generation, you know, but is good.
Is, and not that way though,
it's really not. And I'm like, has it always been like this, or is it times a million right now because of social media?
I think social media is so much easier to be mean because you're behind this screen and no one sees your face.
And it's not even real. A lot of it's not even real people.
Right.
So it's really sort of, it's been interesting to navigate. And listen, I'm a tough
I was going to say, you have a thick skin though.
I have a thick skin. I was in media for 28 years. Yeah. I've had cancer. I've nearly died. Oh, I've, you know,
you have three kids. That'll
listen. I'm tough as nails. Like, I really am. There is nothing anybody can say that will hurt my feelings, because I give zero
fucks.
Yes. you know, but the point is that no woman should ever have to be subjected to this kind of, you know,
scrutiny.
Well, just meanness, just like pure meanness. But anyways, I feel good about it, and I'm excited, and I can't wait to, you know, get my, this cold has knocked me out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So now that I'm feeling better, I may not sound better, but I am feeling better. I'm really looking forward to getting, you know, getting in there and working hard.
Excited. When I heard, I just thought, oh, that it, not that it's a logical step, but I thought, oh, that's such a great way to use your voice, because you already were, you are already such an activist for cancer and Down syndrome and, you know, all the things you raise so much money for. So this seems like a great way to kind of continue
that. I feel like that too. I'm excited.
Great.
Yeah.
That's so good. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me.
How much I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. I'm truly grateful to Tamara for sharing, and to you for listening. If you like the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen, and tell a friend. You can find us on Instagram at Playful Joy Podcast, and if you'd like to email me questions, comments, or a funny anecdote, it's playfuljoypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening.